And now, a man who campaigned against Barack Obama in all 57 states, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. My guest today is Helen Tansey. She is the director of the Article II Super PAC. She's here to tell us today about a letter that her group has delivered to the Commission on Presidential Debates. Helen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Before we get to the letter, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and the Article II Super PAC?
Sure. A little bit about myself. Many folks always like to share within the community that we find ourselves in our bona fides. And I came into the whole Article II constitutional issue with regards to eligibility back in 2008 when I was a Democrat. And I was a lifelong Democrat, and as Ronald Reagan used to say, I didn't leave the party left me, and I certainly know precisely what he was saying when he said that, because the party left me and countless other Democrats back in 2008 when they accepted the nomination or put forth the nomination of Barack Obama as the presidential nominee. Of course, we knew then, many of us Democrats then knew that Barack was not eligible, and we did everything we could possibly do to stop the nomination at the convention level, as well as in the primary and then into the general election. So I have been engaged in this battle, so to speak, for our Constitution since 2008 and left the Democratic Party in May of 2008 and became an independent and have since become a constitutional independent. Article II Super PAC is an organization that came about in 2011, late 2011, where our sole mission is to educate the voter what Article II is, what it means, why it is so critical that we stand up to and defend any erosion whatsoever of Article II and the presidential qualifications. It means to those of us that have engaged in this fight, it means our national security, it means our military serving under a individual that has sole allegiance to the United States, as well as to the men and women that serve in our armed forces. So for us, Article II was a vehicle in which we created to be able to educate and address this issue and fight back.
Okay, let's talk about Article II, though. Explain to the listener that may not be familiar with it what the name of your super PAC has to do with President Obama's eligibility.
Sure. Article II is, it's simple. There are several articles within the Constitution of the United States, and Article II was drafted from the beginning, and it's simple. It's the presidential qualifications, and there are three very, very basic requirements of any individual who chooses to run for the president of the United States. You've got to be 35 years or older. You've had to live in the United States for 14 years prior to the election or your nomination. And you must be a natural born citizen. And so typically, say for example, an individual was born in the United States to citizen parents, they went abroad to study, they came back, 14 years later they want to run for the office of the President of the United States. Well, that's perfectly legitimate because they never said or declared that their allegiance was now to the country they went abroad to study in, et cetera, et cetera. So natural born citizen is very simple, and there is it's just as basic as ABCs, and that is you are an individual born of American citizens being plural, on American soil. That's it. It's not where you were born and or where you were born or citizen parents. It's both. They're wedded. And so our goal is to, like I said, be able to educate and communicate in every possible forum we can find ourselves in that is what the definition is, that is what the founding fathers intended, and so on.
Well, you're saying that's what the definition is, but the founding fathers didn't actually put the definition in the Constitution, did they?
No, because the Constitution isn't a dictionary or a thesaurus or an encyclopedia. All they did was put in what the criteria was, where folks need to go to be able to ascertain and understand what the term of natural born citizen means. You've got to go to other sources, and those are first sources. Those are the individuals that were at the convention, the founding fathers that were developing the Constitution of the United States. You have to go to their writings. You have to go beyond to understand what the difference was between a natural-born subject versus a natural-born citizen. And you just have to do your due diligence to be able to understand what that term was, what the intent was behind that term. And one of the places folks can go to be able to learn exactly what that historical, what the history is behind the insertion of natural-born citizen is by going to our website, which is r2superpac.com, and go up into the headline, and it says Article 2 Facts. Click on Article 2 Facts, and that will give you the entire history of everything that occurred, the court cases, everything, when it comes to our founding fathers and their intent behind including this natural-born citizen requirement, qualification of any individual that chose to run for president of the United States.
Well, when you talk about the writings of the founding fathers, which of the founding fathers actually put down in writing what natural-born citizen means?
That would have come right from the very beginning of the Constitutional Convention. You had Alexander Hamilton who wrote, as well as John Jay, various items that to President George Washington, and those individuals were expressing, Alexander Hamilton, for example, expressed, "No person shall be eligible to the office of President of the United States unless he be now a citizen of one of the states or hereafter be born a citizen of the United States." Well, that was rejected shortly later when John Jay wrote a letter to George Washington in 1787, basically stating verbatim, "Permit me to hint whether it would be wise and seasonable to provide a strong check to the admission of foreigners into the administration of our national government, and to declare expressly that the command in chief of the American army shall not be given to nor devolve on any but a natural born citizen." And the reason John Jay felt so strongly was that full allegiance piece. They didn't want an individual that had maybe been born to American citizens, but in Britain or in Japan or wherever, coming back to the United States and then running because they were simply born to citizen parents of the U.S. So the sole allegiance piece is so critical to our national security and so critical to our armed forces that if you have a divided loyalty, a person who has divided loyalty serving, you're imposing extreme concerns with regards to national security. So it's very, very important for folks to understand that this issue that has been percolating for 4 years now has nothing to do with a personality or nothing to do with the color of an individual's skin or anything. It's got everything to do with the security, the national security of the United States, and the commander-in-chief holding sole allegiance, especially when it comes to our armed forces and our military and where they go to serve.
One of the places that our founding fathers might have gone to get a definition for natural-born citizen would have been in Emmerich Vattel's Law of Nations. I understand from talking to various people that there were at least two copies of that floating around the Constitutional Convention. Is that something that's addressed on your website?
Actually, that's not. And what my understanding is the Law of Nations, the first book, and forgive me, I don't recall who it was sent to, but I think it was John Jay. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but don't quote me. But there was a book, the Law of Nations was sent to one of the individuals that was very prominent within the convention. And that individual then made copies and sent those copies the best he could mm-hmm. to a handful of those individuals within the convention. And at least that's my understanding. I could be wrong, but that is what the historical reference that I've been able to identify and research, that there was one single copy, and then that single copy was then copied and brought to the attention of certain individuals within the convention.
To be fair, many people say that legal scholars are not unanimous on this. There is still some debate within the legal community as to what natural-born citizen means. Would you agree or not?
I would agree with that. It depends. That doesn't mean – it would depend on who those individuals are. It's always fascinating when you look at a constitutional scholar or one that self-declares they're a constitutional scholar. When you start to look at where they align themselves politically, you can start to see their agenda. There are individuals that are part of the Heritage Foundation, and I won't go into naming any names, but they take the 14th Amendment position. There are individuals that are strict constitutionalists that are absolutely opposed to the 14th Amendment argument simply because when you look at the 14th Amendment argument, there was no decision, none, that was declared when it came to natural-born citizen and what the definition was. There was discussion about it, certainly, but there was no definitive declaration handed down by any of the justices in the Wong Kim arc and or anything related to the 14th Amendment. So you've got to go back to Minor versus Heffersett. But what I've learned is you've really got to look at who that individual is and where their particular political allegiance lie. And once you figure that out, you can pretty quickly discern who is somebody that is truly being middle of the road and independent minus of, or those that are simply carrying the water for whatever political voice they need to carry the water for.
Well, it's my understanding there were legal scholars who suggested that John McCain certainly had a natural-born citizen issue on his hands, but they have remained completely quiet regarding Barack Obama. So I couldn't agree with you more. A lot of these people will even change their opinions based on which particular candidate you're talking about. Now, because there is still some disagreement, do you think in the future, Helen, that it's necessary for our Congress to go back in and clear this up and straighten it out so that there
I would rather, I'll be candid, I don't want Congress to touch it. I don't want the Supreme Court to touch it. My feeling is this. I think the people need to touch it, and my feeling is there needs to become not a nonprofit like the Commission on the Presidential Debates, not an entity that is controlled by the political parties, but an entity that is controlled by the people who create a vetting process where the two-party system, or three parties, or however many parties, but primarily right now the two dominant, Republican and Democrat, have to go through when they nominate any candidate for president and vice president, that they have to offer to an independent, nonpartisan body all of the credentials that satisfy that body in being able to declare unanimously that individual is a natural born citizen.
If you were the head of that body, what credentials would you want to see?
One of the credentials, obviously, a birth certificate is a very important document, but it's not the only document. You want a birth certificate. You want, and that document has to be in your hand. It can't be an image posted on a website, for heaven's sake.
Sorry.
So it's got to be something that is in your hand, and it's got to be something that can be forensically challenged and tested if anybody wanted to do that. You also have your Social Security, your Social Security number, all of that information. You would have other basic facts, maybe some genealogy with regards to your parents, your mother and your father, where they came from, where they were born, and you go back a generation. You don't have to go back any further than one generation, and so on. So you only want to satisfy the natural-born citizen qualification, the 35 years and older, and the 14 years in the United States. So you don't want to go beyond that.
How about hospital records?
Hospital records, you really would have to dig into the parent's background a great deal more than obviously has occurred in the past. Currently, right now, there's question marks coming from the left about Mitt Romney's parents, his father. And so, you know, they're all legitimate questions.
Yeah.
So any candidate that wants to declare or run as a major party ticket holder or nominee should have to go through a vetting process by the people, not by the political parties, by the people.
Certainly not by the media.
Oh, Lord God, no.
Well, you mentioned a couple of documents in there. Let's talk about how all this sort of falls out for Barack Obama. Assuming, there is debate about this, but assuming that you've nailed the Article II issue correctly, Barack Obama's father clearly was not a U.S. citizen, so that would rule him out. There are major questions about Barack Obama's birth certificate, as the person who actually put together all 10 of the evidence videos for Sheriff Arpaio's first two press conferences, I can tell you that there is no question in my mind that the birth certificate has been altered. Yes, there might have been something on file there, but based on the computer forensics, which is rock solid, that document has been altered. I also suspect it was amended around 2006, 2007, which would mean it would have absolutely zero probative value. At this point, the Selective Service card, an even bigger joke than the birth certificate. We've got, you know, two digits missing in the year date, even though the dates came in four-digit solid blocks of rubber. You can tell that they took the year 2008, cut it in half, and turned the 08 upside down to make 80. In fact, I don't think anything existed in the Selective Service records until 2 days after Obama made the mistake of telling George Stephanopoulos that he registered for Selective Service. And then you've got a Social Security card that was issued by the wrong state. And a lot of people say, well, they just thought a 9 was a 6 or a 6 was a 9 or whatever. But the fact is, if you're over the age of 12, which he apparently was based on the date of this issuance of his Social Security card, you have to go down and get it in person. So did the clerk in Hawaii suddenly think they were in Connecticut? I don't think so. So his Social Security card doesn't pass E-Verify. It was issued by the wrong state. And there's a birth date in the computer record indicating that somebody else who was born in 1890 also used that number. As you well know, Helen, the Social Security office doesn't recycle Social Security numbers. Same thing with Selective Service. I mean, you cannot serve. This has nothing to do with where Barack Obama was born. You cannot serve in the U.S. Post Office or the federal executive branch of government if you haven't filled out your Selective Service registration within a timely manner, which he obviously didn't. Then you've got the birth certificate, which is a complete joke, but even if he was born here, his dad wasn't. So there are so many eligibility issues, but I have to ask you, Helen, why is it that no one seems to care? Congress doesn't care. I've had major Fox News contributors on my show. They don't care. Michelle Bachmann actually dodged that question when she was on my show. Nobody wants to talk about it. My local congressman won't. Why do you think, Helen, that no one, including people who should be helping us, like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, no one will help us?
Well, it's fascinating that you rattled off those three primary documents when it comes to validating or affirming or authenticating Barack Obama's eligibility. The short answer to your question, and it's a political one. It's my understanding is, and it's logical to me, and it may not be logical to you and or your listening audience, but and that doesn't mean I agree with it. It's just it makes sense. And that is back in 2007, John McCain knew he was not a natural-born citizen. And John McCain was doing everything he could possibly do to legitimize his NBC qualifications. Now, understand, there's a very gray area here. John McCain was born in Panama. Mm-hmm. And his mother and father went to Panama to serve the United States.
Right.
And it just happened on the military base. They didn't have a hospital because the military base was still being built out. So John's mom, when she gave birth to John, she had to go to a hospital, which was off the base. So that's a gray area. I think people can forgive that. And certainly understand he wasn't born on sovereign soil or whatever, because there was no sovereign soil for him to be born on unless there was a midwife there and she made arrangements and all that. But what mother is thinking of that when she's giving birth to a child? It just doesn't happen. So what I've been told by several sources within D.C. is John was doing, or Mr. McCain was doing everything he could to pass the muster, so to speak, on his legitimacy as a natural-born citizen. And apparently there was some sort of deal that was struck between the Republican Party leadership and the Democratic leadership, and that was the Democratic leadership would give John McCain a pass. They wouldn't make a big deal out of it. They'd snuff it, do whatever they needed to do. And that would be the end of it, because if you think about it, back in 2007, the nominee who was closest to being elected or nominated by the DNC was Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody back in 2007 knew this guy with this odd name, Barack Hussein Obama. Everybody heard of the name, but nobody took it seriously. Democrats and so on were like, he doesn't have a snowball's chance. Whereas Hillary Clinton had the name recognition, she had the machine, she had all of those pieces in place. So the Republican leadership made a deal, a backroom deal, with the Democratic leadership, and that's how you got Senate Resolution 511 passed with 99-0 with John McCain abstaining. That makes sense. But
what was the deal?
Say what?
So what was the deal?
The deal was the Democrats would ignore and not make an issue out of John McCain's natural-born citizenship. If you watched the tenor in 2007 and even into 2008 with regards to his natural-born citizenship, it never got legs. Yeah, there was a bunch of noise, but it never got legs. There's a reason it never got legs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the Democratic Party said, we're not going to engage here. We made a deal. Well, what the Republican leadership wasn't aware of is that the Democratic Party was obviously going to stab or do something to remove Hillary as the front runner and to put Barack Obama in there. They had a deal on the table. And so there are many who believe that the Republicans were absolutely blindsided. They didn't know, because all of them assumed, just like the rest of us out here assumed, Hillary Clinton was the front runner and she was going to gain the nomination. And she didn't. But there was that deal on the table. So they had
normally, when you make a deal, there are two sides of it. I mean, what was the deal? We'll lay off a John McCain, but you can never, ever, ever bring this issue up with a Democrat, you know, into the future?
Could very well be. But if you're a strict constitutionalist and you're looking at Article 2, there is not one word in there about a woman serving as President of the United States. And there are many within the constitutional community that believes or takes the strident position that a woman cannot serve. So maybe that was part of the deal.
Well, given the fact that women can vote now also and that African-Americans can vote, do you really think that there was concern on the Democratic Party's part that the Republicans would come out and say Hillary Clinton isn't legitimate because she's a woman?
I wouldn't use the word legitimate. I would use the word qualified.
Okay, a legitimate candidate. I mean, I probably shouldn't borrow words from Todd Akin, but the point is, though, the other thing is, too, just to kind of, you know, I call him like I see him on the show, even when I'm on the same side of the person I'm interviewing. John McCain, if I'm not mistaken, was able to produce documents indicating that he was born on that base and that he did not have to go off of that base to be delivered.
I've seen those same documents. He also went to a federal court, which has kind of been mum. But he took his whole natural born citizen status, brought it to a federal court, and a judge ruled in his favor. So there's a lot of things Mr. McCain did to be able to be qualified. He, quite frankly, the guy went above and beyond to demonstrate his natural-born citizenship and that he was absolutely 100% qualified. There's no question. He definitely went beyond. And that is to be commended, whereas we've got the exact opposite when it comes to Mr. Obama. He's done nothing to authenticate that he is qualified. He's given us, think about this, I don't think people realize, he's given us two PDF images of a birth certificate. One was a live birth, and the other one is supposedly a birth certificate. But they're PDF
images. One's the certificate of live birth, one's the long-form birth certificate.
Yeah, but they're images. Even in the court case with Phil Berg back in 2009, the Bob Bauer, then Perkins Coie, and attorney for the DNC, asked the judge, and I cannot remember the name of the judge right now, but it was Phil Berg's, I think it was one of his first cases, but he asked the judge to acknowledge the certification of live birth. Well, of course, the judge... there's a term for this, and I'm butchering it, and so I don't want to do that. But the judge, you know, absolutely refused. It was an image on a computer. How do you take judicial notice? That's the term I'm looking for. Judicial notice of an image on a computer without ever having it in your hands, so that your clerks and whomever can legitimize it. So you have the total opposite of John McCain. John went to great lengths to demonstrate his natural-born citizen qualifications, yet on the other hand, this other fellow, Mr. Obama, has gone through no great lengths, and both images or the only two documents he's put forward is two images that nobody can verify.
Well, I agree with that, and I might add that in the case of the long form, he allowed Savannah Guthrie to take a photograph of it. She was the only one in the room among all the reporters that was allowed to handle it. She famously said, "I felt the raised seal." And then she got out her camera and started snapping pictures of it. Well, I want to say within the next 45 minutes to an hour, based on the creation time in the properties of the document that is posted at whitehouse.gov, it was scanned into a computer and turned into a PDF file, basically. And if you pull that PDF file into Adobe Illustrator, release the clipping mask, you see additional vital statistics coding, and you've got an extra 1/8 inch of border going all the way around it. And it's not just a matter of the border was stretched out an extra 1/8 inch. There's actually extra, you know, border pattern there. So there's pattern, not on the original. And you cannot have something on a scanned copy of an original that's not on a photographed copy of the original. So right there, we know that there's some hanky-panky going on with the PDF file. The example I like to give people on my show is that if you and your family went down to a portrait photographer, had your family picture taken, and then you went by and picked them up, the prints, that is, and you loved them so much you wanted to email a copy out to all your friends, so you asked your photographer to email you the digital file, and when you opened that digital file in Illustrator, you saw an extra person in the photo that wasn't in the original, you knew they weren't in the room, you would say, "Hey, what did this guy do to the photo file? That person wasn't there." It's the same thing with the extra vital statistics coding and the extra border. That wasn't on the original that Savannah Guthrie photographed. And some people, Helen, try to get around it by saying, "Well, you know, Barack Obama got two certified copies of his long-form birth certificate. One of them was photographed by Savannah Guthrie, and the other one must have been scanned into the computer to make the image we see at whitehouse.gov. No, I think not, because there were three date stamps on that document that were all put on by hand, and there was one registrar stamp put on by hand. And when you line up the Guthrie photo with the whitehouse.gov PDF, those hand-placed stamps, all four of them, line up perfectly. And there is no way in the world that with all four of those stamps being placed by hand that those aren't images of the exact same original certified copy. So that alone, the fact that there's stuff on the PDF file once you release the clipping mask that's hiding it, that's not on the picture that Savannah Guthrie took, tells you that it is a fraud. That would be enough to launch an investigation into you or me or any other citizen, but for some reason it hasn't been enough to launch an investigation into Barack Obama, which means that we basically live in a country where people think our president is above the law.
Doesn't that just boggle your mind? It boggles my mind.
It does.
It's so unfathomable to me. Even 4 years of doing this work, researching, studying, reading, talking to constitutional scholars, doing everything I could possibly do to truly wrap my brain around all of this, to learn exactly what you just said, that knowing all of this, it boggles my mind. There is no one willing to step up to the plate. And other than Sheriff Joe,
mm-hmm,
of Republic County, but there's no one within the federal system at all that is willing to step up and say, you know, we've got a problem here,
mm-hmm,
and we need to put this to rest. And if there's some stuff going on here, we need to know about it, we need to investigate it, we need to research it, and so on and so forth. None of that is happening.
Well, with the little time that we have left, tell us about this letter that your group sent to the Commission on Presidential Debates and what you hope to achieve with it.
Well, we sent a letter on Friday. It was sent to Mr. Farenkov, as well as Mr. McCurry, over at they're the co-chairman of the Commission on Presidential Debates. And the point of the letter is, when you go to the Commission on Presidential Debates website, they state very clearly in their charter that no individual candidate would be invited to participate in any of their presidential debates unless they were constitutionally qualified, and they list the three qualifications. And one of those, obviously, is natural-born citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wrote the letter to the co-chairman's attention stating the facts as we know them today, that there is an enormous amount of questioning with regards to Mr. Obama's eligibility and his qualifications under Article 2. You mentioned early on in the radio program with regards to Mr. Obama's qualifications that his father was a citizen governed by the British Nationality Act of 1948. And back in 2008, when Mr. Obama ran for president, he had a website called Fight the Smears, and he posted his certification of live birth, and underneath the certification image, he stated unequivocally that his father was a British subject. And under the Nationality Act of 1948. Therefore, that immediately, right there, immediately disqualified him as a qualified natural-born citizen. And natural-born citizen, again, goes back to citizens parents, plural, and born on American soil. The reason those two are wedded is for sole allegiance, especially as it relates to our armed services, because they become the commander-in-chief. Having an individual who has dual loyalties, any kind of loyalty, but primarily dual or tri loyalties, should not be in charge of our armed services. So that Article 2 was placed into the Constitution to assure that no one other than a truly natural-born citizen, a person with, like I said, American citizens born on American soil, could ever win that office. Well, a dual citizen did win that office. And so our goal with regards to the letter is to point out the fact that, A, he's a dual citizen, B, the images that he has put up on his website to authenticate his natural-born citizen qualifications have been proven to be fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got, of course, the Selective Service. We've got, as you said earlier, the Social Security numbers in question, and so on. So there's ample evidence that points to the fact that Mr. Obama is, at best, a dual national citizen. He is not a natural born. Dual does not equal natural born. It never has. It never will. And so you have all this evidence. So our goal with the commission is to point all of this out and to ask them to look into it. And to, if they aren't willing to look into it, then to at least accept our arguments and not have this dual citizen participate in the presidential debates come October.
And knowing that the odds of them doing that are pretty slim.
None. But, you know, it doesn't hurt to ask.
Yeah,
it's horrible. It's really sad, Mark, that we're laughing about it because, I mean, you and I both know, we've been writing letters, we've been contacting anybody and everybody in any position of authority and asking them, begging them, please stop this madness. And they just absolutely refuse. So it's sad that we the people can't get any kind of remedy. Any kind of remedy. All we're asking for is please vet the guy.
Yeah.
And if he's not qualified, he's not qualified, and he's not. He's already told us he's not. So he told the whole American public in 2008, I am not qualified. But the American people just absolutely refused to accept that.
I talk about citizen apathy all the time on the show. It's absolutely disgusting. Let's give the left credit. They have dumbed down America through their control of the media, through their control of our educational systems. They have America right where they wanted them to be. This is a group of people who would, if they were given a choice between watching the finals of American Idol or being allowed to vote, would clearly pick watching the finals of American Idol. They have us to the point where very, very few people care at the level that you do and that the people that are part of your super PAC do. It's gotten to the point where people don't know anything. I mean, I had a next-door neighbor the other day. I brought up the Tea Party, and they said, yeah, I've heard something about that. What is the Tea Party? And they were serious. They barely had heard of it. Yeah, I've heard of that. What is that? And it's like today, I'll be honest, I didn't put a chair in my front yard because I live in a somewhat remote part of the subdivision. We have practically no traffic. No one would see it other than my neighbors, and I can guarantee you not a single darn one of them would know what it meant. It's just that's where we are today. People just don't care. If you saw the film that John Ziegler did where he was interviewing liberals after they voted for Obama, I mean, they didn't know who Nancy Pelosi was. They didn't know who Harry Reid was. They didn't even know which ticket Sarah Palin was on. I mean, these are the kind of people that are going down and voting. So you can push that hope and change nonsense when you have these types of people voting. And you can also say, hey, the president isn't a natural-born citizen. And they're going to say, hey, that sounds like history. I'm not too good at that. So let me ask you this. I mean, you're frustrated. I'm frustrated. We've got an American electorate that, you know, frankly votes for president the same way they voted for their high school, you know, council or for, you know, their cheerleaders or their class president. It's who they liked and who they were friends with and who's the best looking.
Well, I think that, where do we go? That is a great question. What Article 2 is focused on and will remain focused on throughout the rest of the election cycle is solely educating. And it's what we've learned is if we don't approach the average citizen in the manner of wake up or you're stupid or whatever, but we just approach them with the delicacy that they honestly deserve, and the respect, that, you know, so what? You screwed up in 2008. You didn't know, but at least understand what this means. And if they choose to vote otherwise, that's their choice. Hopefully they won't, once they learn the facts. But where do we go from here is constantly just pounding this message until it gets through to individuals that are willing to listen and willing to say, you know, there is something wrong. And I do sense something's not right with my country and so on. So we just have to continue to educate. It's to me, it's the only answer.
Well, I'm to the point where I think we could have a videotape of Stanley Ann giving birth to Barack in a little village in Kenya, and the mainstream media would still find a way to say, well, that's not a legitimate piece of evidence. I mean, when you look at what Sheriff Arpaio has collected, and, you know, I realize they're not through turning things up at this point. They've got other things on the horizon that they're looking into, but when you look at what he's turned up at this point, it would have already been enough to put most people in jail. So, I don't know that it's going to do any good to come up with any more evidence at this point. I think we've frankly shown the world enough evidence already. And so, I mean, maybe education is the answer, because it's not that there's no evidence. It's just that nobody is educated enough on the matter to care about the evidence. That's all I can think of. But we do live, and I certainly don't suggest that we approach people by saying you're stupid, but we do live in a world where people are more focused on America's Got Talent and American Idol and CSI and NCIS and everything else. And most people, a lot of people don't vote, and a lot of the ones who do vote the way their friends vote, and that's why I made the comparison to a high school student council election. You know, you would think, given the literacy rates of our present-day society, that we would cast more educated votes than our ancestors did, but that's not the case. it's not the case. I really think that we have people walking into a voting booth who just know, well, I'm supposed to vote for this party or that party because that's what my spouse is doing, or that's what my best friend is doing, or that's what all the people at work are doing, and that's what they do. So I don't know. I mean, you talk about education. There's certainly a lot of that that needs to be done.
Yeah, elections are not a popularity contest, that's for sure. And, you know, I know I'm guilty of not doing my due diligence in the past on candidates and, you know, voted party line. Mm-hmm. And those days are over. That will never happen again, not after the last 4 years and what I've learned about both the political system and a plethora of other issues. But the elections are so important, especially when it comes to the president and the Vice President of the United States. And, you know, America it used to serve as a beacon. And, you know, my grandparents came here from Ireland and so on. And, you know, I have this sense, whatever you want to call it, but I owe them. You know, they came here with nothing, and all they were seeking was freedom and opportunity, and to give up on that and to allow these individuals who are doing their damnedest to erode the constitutional principles and the Constitution itself, the Bill of Rights, the whole nine yards, those individuals that just think it's a piece of paper and needs to be tossed into a trash can. It's such a disservice to my grandparents' memory, maybe yours, and all of the other individuals that came here seeking freedom. And it comes from the gut. It comes from the soul. You know, we've just got to do what we've got to do to defend and fight these rascals off and ship them off where they need to go.
We're going to start shipping them off?
Yeah, I would have no problem loading them up in a ship and sending them to some faraway land. but you know, somebody you just don't turn your back on your family lineage and your family heritage and so on and just say, oh, it's just a piece of paper. It's not a piece of paper. It's what those people came here for. And I've benefited from that, and I'm in it to fight, and I'm determined. I get frustrated from time to time, no question. I get mad and so on, but I'm determined. I'm focused and I'm determined. And we've got to win. Losing is not an option.
I couldn't agree with you more. Helen, before you go, tell everybody how they can find out more about your Super PAC, how they can get involved as a volunteer or as a donor.
Visit us anytime at www.art2superpac.com. Again, art2superpac.com. And PAC is spelled PAC. But come see us. We've got a new video up. We just released it tonight. I'll send it to you.
Okay, thank you.
But we're always trying to refresh and bring out new information. And join us by signing up as a subscriber. We send out updates weekly. We don't inundate your inbox, and we don't, you know, send you out 10, 20 emails a day. We don't want to lose you. So we're very courteous and respectful of your inbox and your time. And by all means, on every page over at the R2 Super PAC website, there's the donate button, and you can donate either through PayPal and or we have a fundraising platform known as Pyrex. And then if you don't want to do an electronic, such as a Visa card, MasterCard, American Express, we offer our P.O. box so folks can send in a check.
Well, you've got all your bases covered. Helen, I wish you the best of luck with your Super PAC, and like you, we're going to keep fighting, so keep up the good work.
You got it. Thank you so much for having me on tonight.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar.